Welcome back, folks, to episode 30 of the Running Man Self-Regulation Skills and Self-Improvement Project podcast with me, your host, Dr. Armando Dominguez, PhD in health psychology, licensed professional counselor, and an adjunct professor at a local community college. And I'm certain glad to be reaching out again this week to talk about the shadow self. What we'll call the dark side, walking on the dark side and discussing the power of the dark side or the darker aspect of self, the shadow self that often gets shunned by our Western world because we tend to attribute to it negative, dark, and sometimes even evil tendencies that hinge on violence, death, and destruction. And that's not always the case. Now, we are capable of doing great harm. And that's just the reality of being human, but it doesn't mean yet that you don't have love or capacity for compassion, kindness, and genteel actions. It does not mean that at all. But we tend to diametrically oppose things because our human tendency is to categorize things and make sense of stuff. When things become abstract or wherever the lines or edges become blurred, we get uncomfortable and we fast run to categorize things. And sometimes categorical thinking is helpful when organizing things, but it can become a very distinctly troublesome process whenever we are in a fight-flight mode, when things are stressful, when we're anxious or in pain, or fear loss or expect loss, and we're predicting some sort of pain in the future. That's when categorical thinking then leads us to become very assumptive to a point that it's not only detrimental, but very limiting to our ability to be flexible in response. And this is where we're going to start our discussion. Once again, we're going to be discussing the shadow side of myself. Walking your shadow self today is what we'll call it. And when we walk with the shadow self, what is it that I mean whenever we're discussing shadow behavior or shadowed things or things that are in the dark or occulted? The term occult often is associated with negatives and evils and things having to do with bad things against people. But occult means to hide, occulted conditions, meaning light, limited. And therefore, we have a limitation of visibility if we're speaking of being able to see things with our physical eyes. And if you've noted much of the podcast, in the previous episodes, even this current one, hinges very strongly upon our perception of things because our experiences moment to moment are perceptual, and much of what we linguistically label, name, and use to make sense of our world with, to organize and categorize in our minds, are reflective of that visual sense experience. What do we see? What do we not see? I'll be given a couple of useful self-regulatory skills for whenever you're in the dark, in the physical dark itself, and realizing how these tools can be useful whenever you're trying to make safe, or at least feel safe whenever maybe you're feeling anxious, worried, stressed. But what we're going to look at more are the ideas that stem from the shadow and what I deem as my shadow, those things that I would consider in the dark or maybe things that I don't want people to know about me. Now, I've trained in martial arts for in excess of 38 years, and that could be considered a shadow practice. And this is an example where I'm allowing my aspects of my body, my capacity to defend and attack, even in a practice context, that I will actually try to target and mock harm somebody. And of course, in training, there's always a risk. And to train well, one has to have real intention. And one wants to train good self-defense skills, you have to have somebody really trying to hit you so that you know the stuff that you're learning works under pressure. And you graduate that. You start slow and move up to a point of high skill over time. And this is part of the developmental process where we learn to deal with the emotions and the thoughts that come along with somebody's attacking me, someone's punching me, kicking me, someone's coming at me with a knife or a stick, and what do I do? And we work these out small bits at a time, and it is a very time-intensive and very grueling practice at times where you're physically exhausted. And it's when we're exhausted that we have to find out, did I get to a limit? Did I get to a point that I give up? Does my body just stop? Do I say, that's it, I don't want any more of this? Or do we overcome it somehow? So it's a way of going through a very dynamic obstacle, getting over things, not get over it in a sense, but rather getting over an obstacle, past an obstacle, through an obstacle is what I really meant to say, and being able to accommodate the situation by being victorious, defending successfully, and not getting hit or perforated if you have a pointy object coming at you. And I say that lightly because it is a very uncomfortable practice, even when you've been doing it a long time. Whenever we train with training knives, if you train with the idea, oh, that's just plastic, well, you're not going to get the full experience. When you train with the idea that any touch could cause your flesh damage, then you've elevated practice, especially if you have that visual mind working wherever you can imagine the cut or the stab. That being said, it's not always pleasant, but it is within a training condition that trains you to develop real skill. And this is about walking with a shadow once again. So why would I want to do that is the question. And two, what do I get from doing that? One of these things that you get is resilience. You get some familiarity with the unknown. Whenever we don't know the rules, we tend to default back into the areas that we do know, even if those areas that we know aren't good for us, but you know what to expect. Often we will degrade back, not into the lowest level of training, but rather our most commonly practiced level of training. And that may or may not be good for us. And this is really why I was using that as an example. So whenever we do things like sports, do we press ourselves? Do we test ourselves? Do we test our mettle? Do we check and see what we're made of? Do I give up? Do I cry? Do I run away? Which running away isn't a bad thing in self-defense. You don't have to sit there and stand and deliver once again, because then that gets into bravado and fighting for false ideas in many cases that once the person is gone, there's nobody there to thank them or uphold them. So whenever we're thinking about, in another sense, self-defense or self-protection, protection of family, that is way different. And it would seem parallel, but very different. Whenever you have a tangible source and someone you care about and love, then often as a warrior, as a protector, as a male in my case, and a father, would I lay it down for my family that was decided before they were born? Yes, I would. And there's no question, is it scary? Do I want to die? Not necessarily. But those are things that we have to come to terms with if we want to be effective in those situations, especially the ones that are gnarly and ugly and painful, potentially violent or dangerous or lethal. So what does this have to do with self-regulation? For those of you that are quick to jump on bones of knowledge, you may have pulled some of this out already. But by being familiar with the unknown, you learn to realize that you can walk well under stress. And one thing about survival, and I'm going to quote Dr. Glenn Morris from his book, Path Notes of an American Ninja Master from 1994. He has since passed. He passed away in 2006, but this is one that stuck with me. Out of his writings that really meant a lot to me, but made a huge difference in my understanding of the fact that I was training in life protection arts, survival arts, and to put them in that context gave them much more value to me versus just looking good versus bravado or trying to be stronger than someone else for the sake of competition. Those are hollow things in comparison. But whenever we live a life and we have to deal with those things that are uncomfortable within us, and it doesn't always have to do with fighting or violence, we realize this one thing, and here's the quote from Dr. Morris. Survival isn't pretty. When we realize that, we realize sometimes survival is painful. Sometimes it is bathed in our own blood and sweat and tears, and occasionally whenever you've ever been very sick, maybe even vomit and a little poo, among other things. So What does that have to do with anything? One is that ego has nothing to do with it. It has to do with immediate survival. If you ate something that was tainted or poisonous or sickening, and both ends are emptying at the same time, then you realize you feel a whole heck of a lot better and it smells like hell and you feel relief. You don't care. What you do care about is the fact that you're still alive. And that is the bottom line. So from that perspective, why is walking with the shadow really important? One is realizing is that that is the part of us that drives whenever we don't know what to do, maybe whenever we are not able to think and strategize at our highest level, but it is that part of us that is most visceral and most capable in the immediate sense of harm another if we have to, or break things and be destructive if we must, if it has to do with our making it to the next moment, or getting away from something such as a fire or wild animal or a situation that is dangerous, or from being enclosed in something that could hurt us. There are many that tap into this force, the dark force within us, that dark shadow self that whenever you go out to sea and maybe the undertow is taking you and you somehow figure it out and you get to where you are on the shore and half don't remember what you decided, but you did what you did and you lived. Whenever sometimes somebody's out too far and you go and save them and bring them back and you're doing everything with all you've got and you come back and don't know how you did it. And people are on the shore wondering, how did you do that? Whenever there is somebody that's in a car wreck, for instance, I've seen this myself, and having to pull people out before those vehicles become dangerous. And there are people that are out there waiting and wondering and just kind of half watching to see what's going on, but they won't step forward to assist. And there is an anguish that goes with that. And I had a student just recently tell me of her spouse going to help somebody that was actually in a vehicle that had turned over in a ravine and was catching on fire, and he was stuck. And they were trying to help, and the person was on the verge of burning to death. Luckily, somebody arrived with a fire extinguisher, and then they were able to wait till the paramedics got there. But this sort of a thing, we have things like this happen all of the time. It doesn't always have to be so serious or grandiose. But often it has to do with whenever we're by ourselves and no one else is around, that we wrestle with those parts of us that are sometimes socially inappropriate when we have thoughts that maybe would not be accepted had we spoken them out loud. Maybe they're opinions that we have of ourselves that maybe aren't based in reality, but more so opinion, but yet we let them drive us and keep us down or cause us guilt, shame, and aversion of things that could otherwise help us move in a direction we'd like or shape us in a direction that maybe we weren't happy with and we want to make a break. Whenever we hear the terms reinventing yourself, it's been thrown around rather handily by those people that are helping people get better and do better and become more. I don't have a problem with the term, but I do encourage us to look deeply and realize that we are always in the process of growing, evolving ourselves. And in the scientific methodology, I'll use this as an example. Often we hear about good science is something that we can falsify in the sense that we find out where it's no longer true. And the goal to good science is to find out, well, when doesn't it work? Does it work at all? Is that just a crap doctrine? We don't know until we test it. And by testing, we find out when something is falsifiable. And often it's an odd thing when people throw the baby out with the bathwater when they read science, not realizing that science is always and will always be built on the shoulders of giants, those that have done great things, that they have not arrived in the sense of perfection, but rather they've arrived at a place based on a foundation that creates growth and incites further study. And when someone can falsify information in the sense of science, wherever you disprove, that does not mean that everything that came before goes to zero, is never any good, throw it away. Because if we think about, once again, the horse and buggy, that was really useful. And if we went off the grid and chose not to use fossil fuels anymore, could we still use a horse and buggy? Absolutely. totally useful. But is it useless? Was it falsified? No, it was just rendered something that was less effective than a vehicle that runs on gas, but still useful. So in that sense, whenever we are reinventing ourselves, are we throwing away the old self? Not really. But our idea of the old self and maybe the old behaviors are left behind. Yes. Are those bad things? Not at all. So is that a shadow thing? Yes. Because often those things that we leave behind are things that aren't necessarily serving us to where we can achieve a peak capacity, especially if we're wanting to improve ourselves, our lives, our station in life, and our circumstance. There's nothing wrong with that. Remember, it's just an idea. Often, as an example, I will use raising my own kiddos, being trained in traditional Chinese medical model. Often I was using herbs for training and poultices, this sort of thing. And what was always fascinating to me is that some of the Chinese herbal formulas used cicada sloughs, the skin from the cicadas that are cast off. And here where I live in West Texas, there are more months of high heat than we have of cool, and no real winters for the most part. But during the times we start having high heat and humidity, these creatures jump out of the ground after being in the ground 3 to 5 years. And my youngest called them special bugs. And what was funny is that he told me he was really averse to bugs when he was little, but I kind of showed him nature was okay, and for him to touch things like that was not bad, just to get him past and condition him to not fear things and to question and be willing to understand that we can't always go off into our high fear response like moms and aunties. They scream and, oh, the bee's in my hair, and run around looking the fool. And I'm not saying it's just the women. I see men do this too. But those are learned social responses. So I got them to learn how not to get overtaken by the immediate sense of that doesn't make sense or the lack of knowledge, and encouraging them to approach things without fear. Now, what he said that was absolutely adorable was that they left their dirty clothes behind. If you look inside a cicada slough, it looks like a dirty old shell that has some little stringy ties in the center that look like something you'd see on a hospital gown. And I remember that because that was also an idea that's been perpetual in my life, and the fact that I've always tried to improve myself. And in improvement, there's growth. When a cicada grows, it busts out of the old skin, and it came out of the dark within the dirt when it used to be just this pupal stage creature, a larvae. And as this little grub-looking thing, it grew into a creature that was able to emerge from the ground that was packed hard like a rock from rain and dried dirt. And those are the things in which we burgeon through and from without being able to see where we're going, but just knowing and driving from inside that I've got to be past this. And many of these creatures pass on the way. Some get stuck whenever they're sloughing off the skin, where it dries too fast, or maybe their wings don't extend to where they become prey for the birds because their wings do not harden in a flat state where they're efficient for flying. And this is very much an analog to human life and what we do when we grow as people, when we become human, when we slough off the old self that was used to the dark, the weakened self that was chewing on grubs. Maybe we're sitting on the sofa eating potato chips and ice cream. Not such a bad thing, but I'm making a point. But yet we want to do something that makes us feel stronger, healthier, and more able and capable in our lives. Sometimes we have to slough off the old. And sloughing off the old is part of the dark, or it's a reminder of the dark. And you can't ever go back and put those on. It's like going back and putting your shoes on that you were wearing when you were two, and now you're a full-blown adult. Your feet might not fit in them. Your big toe might. But that's just a reminder as to how much you have grown. And it's okay to keep those as ideas to remind you of your progress. The problem is when we try to go back and relive it, not knowing or half expecting that we'll be able to get back to that sense of prior innocence or maybe even agnosia or lack of knowledge. And it's in our knowledge that we grow. Physically, we grow. emotionally grow, and also in our character, in our personality, we grow. We're no longer the same person we were years back. As a result of our experience, our eyes become more open. Sometimes we seek to open our eyes further because what we've been doing up until now is a rut. We've forgotten to look up and we've kind of grown complacent. And sometimes we love what we're doing to the point that we just want to do that, thinking that's all there is. And then we get disillusioned when we realize, well, that's not as fulfilling as I thought. And sometimes we may get stuck by obligation, catch-22 situations, social contracts. And we feel like we need to do more, we need to become more, but yet we're not able to because something is tying us down. And when we start self-questioning, we start wondering why. What's the situation? What's causing this? We may have a change in our thought patterns and processes, but we start questioning not only what we do, but why we do things, and who am I? And those are important things. We're starting to question the very ego, that self-image, that personage that we've become, that we associate with the things we do, but yet we know there's more to us, and there's something that's like fire burning within us that says, you got to go, you've got to do, you have to have more, do more. This is unfulfilling. When we hit around age 30, often we lose a lot of people to organ shutdown, sometimes strange illnesses, those people that never really find their way. And I'm not saying this is a cause and effect thing, but there is definitely a high correlation. Often people will off themselves or put themselves in situations that are extremely dangerous because they can't find that thing, that in quotes, it, that defines them, that helps them define them, or that gives them that reason to flourish and live. And often they don't know that they're still walking out of the darkness because they've dug the hole in the darkness so much, or they've chained themselves in the sense of the things that they've done that keep them feeling low energy, low level, and in the dark. And then they feel that that's all there is, and sometimes they get discouraged. Some say depressed. I would say they get discouraged, and what they need to find is courage. Courage is a huge thing in moving forward. And whenever we have that sense of there's something else, sometimes we only go by faith, no, there's got to be something else. We still have that bit of fire within us. It's not been extinguished. And we want it to burn. We want it to grow. We want it to illuminate the inside of us. We want it to illuminate the things that have been obfuscated by the dark that often life has imposed on us, that people have imposed on us, that we have imposed in ourselves based on the beliefs of the things that we've been told, that we've seen, that we've experienced. When everybody says, oh, don't do that, that's scary, you're going to lose everything in trying that, that's a discouragement. It could come from a loved one. It could come from family. Oh, don't do that. But yet they're giving you advice about something they know nothing about. But yet something in you calls your attention to it. That means that there's something there for you in many cases. And whenever we push forward, this is where our determination and our dark side steps in, steps up, wakes up, stands up and says, watch me. I'm going to go do. I will give you a very distinct anecdotal experience from my own life. Many years ago, I was working in retail. And this is before I became a dad. And it was just me and my spouse at the time. And we're working two humble jobs, making a living, trying to get ready to buy a house, this sort of thing. So I was probably in my early 20s. And I remember having been out of the military and I wanted to find a retail job. Didn't have anything but my high school education. And I started to go back to college thinking, well, there may be something there. I didn't know what it was, didn't have direction. I didn't know. But I was going and I was enjoying the process. But I knew that there was something more. So I embarked on the educational journey at the time. Mind you, this is circa 1992, 1993. And what I would tell you is that one of my managers, he was younger than I was, and he was in a superior position in the sense that he was a store manager, and he was probably about 22 years. Well, no, he was probably about 19 years old, and I was about 24 at the time, 25. So I was a little more mature than he was, but not much older. But yet, I wasn't having a problem with him, but I told him I had to leave. I worked overnights, and he told me, "Why are you going to school? Just stay here and work and make money. I didn't finish college. I dropped out. You may as well drop out." So that told me very distinctly what his estimation of me was as a human being, because he couldn't or didn't. I wasn't impolite. And I said, "Well, I've got to go to class." But whenever I was walking away, my shadow self was speaking in my own mind, and it said, "Watch me." And I continued that way. Anytime that there was any kind of resistance or somebody not being supportive, and I wasn't looking for it, I didn't need a cheerleader or a rah-rah team behind me. I just knew that I was determined to move forward and find that something that I didn't have, or that I didn't feel that I had in my life at the time. So I continued. And I would say that part and parcel to my parents' upbringing and my martial arts training as well, discipline and self-discipline worked well for me. And part of that was self-discipline. I'm not going to quit my opinion or what somebody else thought of me, but yet I'm going to continue to move forward and grow and seek that growth and embracing that dark self versus falling to the dark and just becoming less and trying less because it's hard out there or it's scary. I remember many times that I had tears in my eyes just from determination, not crying, boo-hoo, my feelings are hurt, but just sheer will and drive and determination. And that desire to want to move forward is what got me to wherever I finished my education. Not that I'm not ever going to be learning anything else, but in the sense of formal education. And that has gotten me to places that otherwise I wouldn't have, especially as a parent. There are many lessons I learned about myself, the dark self. It had to do with how much I love my three sons that I'm very blessed to have, and also the people who are in my lives and how I'm willing to protect them. So walking the shadow self isn't always about the negative. It's not always about the bad or the destructive. But it does have a lot to do with dealing with those things, managing those things, and encouraging those things that are hidden in the dark that other people tell us maybe are shameful, aren't good for you, or maybe you shouldn't do, or those feelings that we get as a result of people's judgments that we gave too much weight to when they measured us from their own insecurities, their own projected insecurities and fears about themselves, but yet they threw them at us. My encouragement today is to love yourself and love the shadow that exists within you. It's not dark in the bad sense. It's not evil because it's obfuscated. It moves well in the dark as a result of it being a survival tool. And here is the self-regulatory skill for in the dark that I promised you. And whenever we were talking about using our peripheral vision is our night vision. If you're ever out in the dark, try not to hard focus your eyes like you're trying to bring things into focus, but just allow your eyes to relax and take all the information in, and you'll realize you'll see better. You'll take in more light and you pick up more details to the edges and even to the front of you, just as long as there's not a light that is obstructing your vision or being pointed at your eyes. You'll be able to see well and navigate in the dark world without necessarily tripping as much as your friends may be. If you're out in the woods, this sort of thing, a very useful tool. But that also calms your mind while you're there and allows you to perceive and take in that information as useful data so you can navigate the ground more effectively. So, that being said, I want to tell you thank you for your time. It's been really good speaking to you this evening. And follow, like, and share. Share this with people that you think may benefit from this. And if you have any comments or questions, send them to the email at runningmangetskillsproject@gmail.com. And once again, we'll talk to you soon. Walk in the dark. It's good for you. And above all, walk well.